Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The Psychology of Work. Today, I'm joined by Jenny Blumenthal, the former PwC partner turned leadership advisor and author of Corporate Rehab. Jenny works with enterprise leaders on how to accelerate growth in the age of AI. What I find really interesting about Jenny's work is that she argues the real constraint on growth right now is not technology, it's leadership capacity. Organizations have more tools, more data, and more AI than ever, but the way leaders allocate time, make decisions, and run teams hasn't evolved at the same pace. Jenny really describes this moment as what she calls like sort of an AI absorption issue, where companies are trying to move faster and innovate, but the leadership systems underneath haven't caught up yet. And that tension shows up everywhere, in decision-making bottlenecks, overloaded leaders, in teams working incredibly hard, but not always aligned on what matters most. Jenny, I'm just super excited to have you here. Not only are you someone I deeply respect, you are a friend and someone I look to in this space. So just, but before we dive in, like, who are you? What's your story? What did I miss here?
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here too. So thanks so much for having me, Bobbi. And we've known each other for years now. And so it's exciting to get to come on the podcast and share these perspectives. So my story, raised by two teachers on a Christmas tree farm before Taylor Swift made it cool and found myself vaulting into corporate America and trying to climb that corporate ladder, really without a roadmap past just get to the top and figure out, and then you'll be able to take care of your family or, you know, do whatever we all assumed would happen once you get to the other side. And in my story, that just meant that I burned out early and didn't realize kind of I was hustling for my worth outside myself, as Brené Brown says. And so from there, reconnected with myself, did a bunch of research, wrote the book, and have two teenagers that I'm raising now. I know that's something we connect on a lot too, here in Washington, D.C. So getting a chance to kind of reauthor the second chapter of my leadership journey now.
Yeah, it's been so fun to just watch you do all these different things, Jenny. And you've just had such incredibly impressive career. And I know that you've, you know, your career really started or spent a lot of time as a partner at PwC before stepping away and writing Corporate Rehab. But what happened that made you start questioning that leadership model that you were operating in?
Yeah. So when I think about the first part of my career, all of it was kind of in service of this grit and hard work ethic that I was passed down from my, we have a long line of Irish American immigrants that came here in the 1850s. And so my grandmother kind of told my sister and I, you know, you can be anything, but you have to, you know, work hard for it. And so I think all of those habits really helped me get to the top of these career ladders. And the challenge was for me is that I had that little voice inside us that we have that said, I don't know if this is really what you're meant to do, or it should feel a lot better than this. Why do I feel exhausted? And am I happy? Or am I just trying to be happy? And I did what we all do when we're running 100 miles an hour. I'm just, let's quiet that voice and I'll get to the next meeting. And I got this, you know, amazing esteem from the job I had. I was flying all over the world, walking into boardrooms at the Fortune 500 and having them say, oh, thank God you're here. We're making this decision. And it felt great. But that little voice kept popping up again and again. And this was about 2019. And so pre-COVID, we didn't have the language. I know you have based on your background, but we didn't have, like, in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, the language of what burnout really was. We didn't have an understanding of how to look for that in teams. And so for me in my story, I was racing to the finish line and not really sure what was waiting for me at the top of that career ladder. And once I made partner, I thought I'd have a little bit more control over my schedule, but more and more demands meant that I felt like I didn't have a choice. I was kind of trapped inside this role that just got ever increasing in terms of pressure. And my kids were in elementary school at that point. And so enter the pandemic, and it really gave me a chance to really reevaluate things. I was running the hospitality and travel practice for the firm at the time. So all of the planes were grounded, all of the hotels were empty, and I had, you know, a ton of career leaders that I had served for years calling me and saying, can you get me a job in a different sector? I had people calling with really real mental health issues trapped in our homes. And so it really brought things into focus. And for me, a lot happened that summer. But one thing was I was taking a pandemic walk with my daughter and we walked by our neighbor's car and he was one of the first casualties, unfortunately, in the city of COVID, in DC, dying of COVID. And he had checked in thinking he had the flu and he was gone 48 hours later. And we walked by his BMW. He ran his own business and his, you know, front seat was strewn with his business papers and he had a half drunk water bottle in the car seat holder. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks, like life interrupted. And I was thinking, okay, I'm trying to be happy. But if I were gone tomorrow, would I be really proud that this is the mark I left on the world? And suddenly I wasn't anymore. And so I left and decided I would kind of just do something different. And that kind of pulled this thread of really digging into all of the ways we lead ourselves that I didn't learn in business school or in the Fortune 500 boardrooms of, you know, how do we actually tune in and get really intentional about the decisions we make? And that led to writing the book that is a 5-step process for people to do their own corporate rehab or reconnect with the things that the values that shaped their decisions, evaluate some of their mindsets and habits. H stands for heal, an acronym, and then arise and reconnect to your strengths. And then B is build a better way for yourself and your teams. And so that's kind of the way that story went and ushered in this whole other chapter where I get to serve a lot of my same Fortune 500 clients just in a really different way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what a story and what a moment. I can literally just picture that car sitting there. And I'm just so sorry to that you lost somebody, you know, in your orbit that you cared about, but also that like that you've had this sort of impetus that is kind of redirecting your life in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So like, why does constantly pushing harder eventually start to break leadership effectiveness?
Yeah.
Like, why is that such a bad thing? You know?
Yeah, great question. So the easiest way for my economists out there is it's a law of diminishing returns. Like there's only mm-hmm. so much we can add to a system and we weren't built to be machines. We're built to be human. So if we're pushing ourselves 24/7, always on 100 miles an hour, now we've added multiple time zones we're operating in or teams that are operating in other parts of the country or other parts of the world. We're just this constant motor that's always running. And we were built to like move really fast and do big things and then rest, right? And then move again and then rest. And instead, what we're doing is pushing ourselves beyond our limits. So when I think about that, what that does is kind of puts us into this really reactive stage because mm-hmm. we're all at capacity and we're just reacting to the next fire, the next drill that comes through, the next email that pings, the next text we get, as opposed to being able to be really intentional. And why that matters is when we think about actually leading growth and then adding AI to the mix, if we're already stretched, we're already at capacity, we're already overwhelmed, then we try to add a new technology on top of it and people are just completely tapped out. And so what happens is we revert to these really reactive habits and our bodies, as you know, from the psychology, our bodies are operating in survival mode, right? And we can't be in that position where we can climb up Maslow's hierarchy of needs and go from, you know, food and safety to love and connection to esteem of a job to self-actualization because we're constantly being pulled back down into that, am I going to have my job after layoffs? What's happening in the world? And so when we're reacting to those places or from that place, it's really hard to expect people to innovate and reimagine their jobs and do the best work of their life when they're feeling like they're really surviving the day to day. So I think that's the tension that I see a lot between pushing harder. You can't push harder when your system is already at capacity. You've got to reset and let some of that pressure off. And then you can actually, what I like to think of it as, is jump that growth curve. You can actually jump from where you were up into an even higher level of performance. And a great example of this we just got to see is at the Olympics with Alyssa Liu, who, what you know, gold medal in figure skating. She burned out 2 years before she did her final performance and said, I'm leaving this completely because she was trying to work the same way. And she felt this pressure from her dad, her coach. And she reset and said, to get to the next level, I'm going to do it on my terms. I'm going to have my own costumes and music and all of these things. And she came back and was able to do it a totally different way. And if you watched her performance, you could see that joy just like completely radiating out of her. And then by the way, that got her the medal, you know, the higher performance, mm-hmm. but she couldn't have done that if she just kept pushing herself harder and harder. And she had to really reset her leadership. And it's the same way with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mind's going in all different directions. And it's also because I'm giving a talk this weekend and coming up on the neuropsychology of like leadership and like the role of cohesion, connection, teams, and like how we're neural units coming together, both as leaders and teams, right? And so I think a lot of what you're talking about is it's really a capacity issue.
Yes.
We aren't machines and there is a limit. And when we're overloaded, we're reacting and responding versus being very intentional. And the other piece of this is like what we think drives our feelings, which drives our behavior. Yes. So if we're thinking like, I'm behind, I'm not succeeding, I'm not up to par, whatever it is, then you're feeling stressed and then your amygdala is firing and then your frontal lobes are more suppressed. Mm-hmm. So you're like quite literally not thinking as clearly.
Right.
When you're operating in that capacity kind of way, you're literally just not operating. You're sub-optimized in terms of your cognition and thinking.
I love that. Right?
Which like, okay, it feels so paradoxical, but you have to slow down to actually free up your frontal lobes to think more clearly.
Yeah. I mean, I just did a talk this week and for 200 leaders on growth, they're trying to get to the next level. And I gave that exact part of like the amygdala. I'm like, you're reacting from this lizard part of your brain and your body's just trying to keep itself safe and constantly scanning. So it can't tell whether your boss asking for something at the last minute is actually a bear or just your boss. And you have to like reconnect with yourself, however you try, you know, choose to do that, just to give a few minutes to let your frontal lobes come back online. So totally, totally aligned.
Yeah. And I was thinking for myself, because, you know, just building this startup, it's like I'm always running and I like going from thing to thing and like code switching at all moments and parenting, all this stuff. That's just reality. And another part of it is like AI is everywhere right now. Mm-hmm. And that AI is helping me in that capacity because it's allowing me to track all the stuff that I'm doing and then prioritize really around priorities.
Yes.
You know, or like level of importance or impact or whatever my goals are.
That's a huge piece of it. Like a lot of what I do in the private coaching I work with the executives that I'm still taking on or in group settings, what we look at is where can AI really free up your time and your capacity? Because we can take all of the stuff that's rote that we're hustling in the hustle culture of like, do this email and do this draft and do this 10 things on the tax list. Where can AI actually give you that 25th hour in the day that we always have been looking for and then free you up for those higher level things where you're creating new things in your business, you're inventing new products and services, you're taking that hour to reconnect with somebody in your network and see what kind of value you can add to them or maybe see if you can be helpful in a sale. You're developing and mentoring people on your team. All of these things that we don't have time for if we're constantly just on email and pushing buttons and getting in endless meetings. And so that's where I think we have this huge opportunity with AI. We've been given this tool that can completely free up our capacity if we choose to use it that way and think carefully about the things that we want to let go of so that we can take on higher level tasks.
Mm-hmm. I just like hired a guy, which I didn't even think, I'm not sure if I need him to do this. Or one of our advisors is like, you might be able to do this yourself, but that neither here nor there. Did you build your own chief of staff yet, agent? Or?
I did. Yes. I've got 3 humans in my business and 3 GPTs running the business. So
amazing. So did you do this yourself?
I did. I actually went to the MIT conference that we had connected at. And that was my first opportunity to get in touch with some of those tools like Lovable and even getting to see what ChatGPT can do. Now I'm exploring a little bit more with Claude, but really was able to upload a lot of my IP and perspectives and the way I would answer a lot of those questions. And you can take this obviously to a place where you can use Delphi and others to do like digital twins. But for me, I just decided I would just see what level of capacity it could free up and how we would repurpose those hours. So I have a chief of staff one. I've got a marketing and sales coach that I built for me, which is great because a lot of times these things that we learn for ourselves, then when you're working like in your own office by yourself and you're about to subprice something or, oh, I don't know if I want to reach out, how can I think about it? It can kind of just get you out of that analysis paralysis and give you a little bit of either a script to say, or here's what other people are charging or whatever it is that you're hung up on. And then I have one that assists in my coaching, where it's looking for trends in my clients and making sure that if there's something I'm not picking up on, it's getting a chance to look through either call recordings or some of the notes that I have. And then there's another one, the final one that I'm in the midst of building is helping me finalize and codify my IP. So when I come up with a new idea, how do I balance that against what I already have versus the, should this be a different, you know, product and service, and gives me some thoughts as a thought partner on that. So yeah, I'm addicted for sure in terms of
looking at. Oh yeah, I couldn't do what I'm doing without AI. Like, it's really helping me not only just prioritize, but do all the stuff that you're describing too, and just kind of like acting as like a thought partner and a builder. Wait, Randa, but have you used OpenClaw yet?
I haven't. No, I know that was on my list for next week, but what are your thoughts? Have you?
I don't know. It sounds a little risky. It's like people, I mean, I'm excited. I think there's a real opportunity, but I think unlike some of the other tools where you can just like jump in and figure it out, this one has capacity for just, you know, taking over and doing things you don't want to be done. So, so I just met with an advisor through that Institute of Quantitative Social Science, the AI Foundry. And he was like, I don't know, just slow down first. And, you know, another advisor was like, you know, just make sure you buy a separate computer. And,
That's smart.
Like, run it like really in a contained way.
Yeah.
I think someone from Microsoft, like some exec, just had OpenClaw like send email or erase all their emails or something.
I was going to say, there was one, I was at a conference where someone was talking about one of the things they were worried about was they had, to your point, had let it loose on the SharePoint. And so associates were, give me the email the CEO just sent, and was able to see some of the confidential stuff. So I think there's definitely a little bit of that figuring out how to do the guardrails. But I'm really excited to kind of play around with a lot of these and see that. I think the interesting thing for people who haven't jumped into it yet is the minute you get in, I feel like you get used to one of the tools, and then somebody else does some leapfrog thing and adds some additional functionality and somebody else. So I don't know. I feel like there's anybody who's kind of hanging back and hasn't done it yet, like, just jump in, because you can't be too late unless you don't do it at all, because these things just keep updating constantly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like you can go at your own pace.
Right, right.
You know, there's most things I feel like are relatively, you can drive at the speed in which feels comfortable for you.
That's true.
But AI is everywhere, right? And you talk a lot about this, and you know, really, as like technology capability is moving faster than organization, faster than leaders like can move, right? Yeah. So what does this gap really look like in the work you're doing? What are you seeing inside companies?
Yeah. So the context we have around this is, if you think about the way work is typically done, it's very built on existing manual systems. And then over the last 90s and 2000s and 2010s, we've added technology systems on top of that. But we've always had time to redesign the process and move everybody over and think carefully about the change management. Now we're at a pace where projects that I used to do, implementing a $4 million system upgrade and taking 9 months, can now get done in a month and a half with a third of the amount of people. And so you don't have the time to do all of the human, you know, changes that we would do that says who's making the decisions and how are we going to streamline and how do we actually make sure that we're measuring the right things. And so all of that is on super speed. And meanwhile, we're left with these human leadership operating systems that are trying to power growth, but are doing it based on old decision processes, death by meetings, looking at the way decision bottlenecks are happening now too, because maybe that decision would have taken a little bit longer, but now it's compressed. And so what I'm seeing is that the growth operating system people are using to try to grow their companies is really being outpaced by the technology. And what we really work on is, how do you actually close that AI absorption gap? So those companies are not set up to absorb the AI. They're measuring adoption. So how many licenses have I given out? But nobody's actually using it in a consistent way. And so they're not seeing that ROI, which is why every study we've seen has said only 10% of companies are actually getting the ROI. Well, those are the ones who are actually either designed already to be able to absorb that because they're newer, or they're redesigning how they do their work. It's one of those things where you think of how these huge companies work. You know, there's a lot of matrices. There's a lot of people making sure we're all signing off in physical meetings. Some of them are using collaboration tools, but a lot of it's, you know, Slack messages as opposed to streamlined decision processes. So that sets up this AI absorption gap where a company can't actually absorb and make meaningful use of the AI because the decisions are too distributed. So what that means at a leadership level is that individuals are just absorbing all of the extra work and are just checking the box on AI today and not actually using it in a way that really will help drive growth or free up their own leadership capacity. And then when you look at that at scale within systems, what I'm seeing is these huge growth goals being given from the C-suite. And when it reaches, you know, the leaders and the managers who are really where the rubber meets the road of whether they're going to actually get this growth done, they don't know how they're going to change because they don't have control over how decisions are made, or they still have to get together with three of their peers and do that again in 2 weeks to make sure the decision happens. And so that's really where we're fine-tuning and making the biggest growth strides with people is at an individual level, how can I return capacity and hours to them? And then as you scale that out, how are you streamlining decisions, looking where there's bottlenecks, really aligning it back to the growth and really clearing out all of the blockers to that capacity?
Mm-hmm. So what is the growth zone? This is like something we've coined in a lot of ways. Like, what is this?
Yeah. So when I did all the research for the book, I really wanted to make sure it was grounded in people's stories, but then also facts and figures. So we were really being diligent about it. And it really addresses individuals where they can get to this place of like, they need to grow, but they're not sure how to get there. And it really kind of stuck in the back of my mind of how do I think about that at scale? Because I'm an operator and that's kind of the way I've been trained is how do you do growth for, you know, Fortune 500 companies? And you can change one person and drop them right back in a system. And then it's really hard to make larger change. And so I started to study the human behavior around how do we do this at scale? And what I came up with was realizing that there's really two ends of the spectrum that we usually wind up in when we try to actually just push and get to the next level. On the one side, we get to burnout, which is where I got to, where we're pushing ourselves so hard that we just don't have the capacity and our system gets overwhelmed. But on the other side, we get to this place I'm calling the plateau, where we see people just say, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm just going to kind of disengage. And that's showing up in the stats that over the last 10 years, disengagement has hovered in this place around 18% of people being actively disengaged, and then a full 50% of people being in the middle. So it was quiet quitting, and then it was quiet cracking, and then it was just whatever term you want to say. But when you take that together, that's like 2/3 of the population just kind of mailing it in and saying, I'll just wait for the next new shiny thing coming down the pipe and what else I'm expected to do. And so in between those two things, being totally disengaged and being burnt out, is the place called the growth zone, is what I call it, where that it kind of gets you hockey stick growth up and to the right, as we're both hockey moms, mm-hmm. where one unit of effort gives you actually much bigger impact than just one unit in terms of a stepwise function. And the idea is, how do you get people to stay in that growth zone without just becoming disengaged and without getting so far into overdrive? So that's really what I do, is work with companies to implement a growth operating system of decision rights, clarity, freed up leadership capacity, alignment to growth goals. And then the final piece is, how do you actually expand and do different and new things that we just don't even have 15 minutes to do right now? But if you actually add AI to that and fine tune your systems, you can be freeing up all this time to actually get ahead in the market. So that's where we focus.
Yeah, I love it. My clinical psychologist hat is like getting engaged, but it's making me think of two things. One, it's like the Yerkes Dodge curve, which is like there's an optimal level of anxiety that drives behavior, right? So if you're too far kind of on the right, you're way anxious and you're incapacitated. And if you're not anxious enough, which I literally had my newly 15-year-old say, he's like, I don't have any stress. I'm like, I think that's a problem. How do I lie?
A little bit.
I'm like, that's cool, but we got some things to work on here. So I don't want to be like that mom, but I feel like I might need to be, because like on the other side of this. And then when I think about it from more of like a mental health lens, I remember like a supervisor once said, it's like, if you think about sort of anxiety on one side and then depression on the other. Mm-hmm. When you live in anxiety at a constant state, instead of just kind of moving back down towards like less anxiety, you actually like, it almost like goes under the graph and it tips over into depression.
Oh, that's
interesting. Your body can't tolerate that level of arousal.
Yeah.
Your body shuts down basically. And so it's like, you can go from that state to like, just like a depressive state because your body's just like, yeah, you're, it's overload.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, I can't deal. And then that's a counter to it. And I feel like that's in a lot of ways you're, what you're describing, but in a more of an optimization lens versus like a clinical kind of.
Well, and to that point, I mean, I think they're related, right? Because we're the same humans when we badge into work, and then we expect ourselves to be acting like supercomputers and the robots, and we can't do it. So how do we actually modulate some of that behavior and do not so many of the same types of tasks that tips us over into one stream or the other? So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, then my mind's going to like, how do you actually do that, right? Yeah. There's like a high level of self-awareness around what you're feeling internally, and then looking at symptoms on the outside where you're sub-optimized. Like, you know that feeling when you're like, I'm just like, I can't do anymore.
Yeah.
And but I have to, because as things do, and you really have to have the wherewithal, or at least for me, to be like, I know how this goes. Yeah. I can push this day out, but it's not going to work. I'm way better off going to bed and getting up early.
No,
and I'm trying to teach my kids that, like, and how do you notice that? Just looking at sort of history and outcomes, and then also the internal signals that are going to draw those behaviors.
Yeah. So I would say on an individual level, I have a couple of tools that I run with my clients of like, give me your calendar, and I run it through a ChatGPT piece that I've built. And we spit out like, here's the areas where you can actually kind of claw back capacity, or here's where it's not aligned with your growth goals, just as a quick calendar audit. And then at scale, I think a lot of it is bringing teams together and making sure that they're all surfacing that so that they don't feel like it's just a them problem.
Yeah.
There's so many things we have control and capacity over doing in ourselves. But again, when we're in a system that's rewarding these types of metrics, and now we have to do new behaviors or multiple checkpoints on a decision when we need to move fast, that's something that an individual person is going to have a really hard time bouncing up against. So we look at behaviors, we look at structural issues, cross-functional things where it's one department versus another, and run leadership labs in person. That was what I was just doing this week, where we got 200 people together. We're running these different leadership labs where people bring a real scenario in. I gave them scenarios that were real in their business, and they had to kind of say, this is how we typically respond. How would we respond in this? If it's this is the old hustle version, this is the new expansive version, what would that look like? And what did we learn? And in 45 minutes, they came up with like 25 different ideas of things they wanted to change. And that feels empowering too. It's not just, oh my gosh, I can't change anything myself. It's look what you did. You got together and you just came up with these ideas, and now we can kind of figure out how we're going to triage them and which we do first. But I think that's how we get to that scalable behavior change, because it takes the individual leader, but then it also takes some changes in the system.
Oh, yeah. And then the integration and application over.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, so what you're, a lot of what you're talking about is it's behavior change, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, we know that's so slow going in terms of, we have habits of thinking, feeling, and doing. It, like I always say, it's like a sledding hill, right? So it's like, once a sledding hill's laid, or we have a habit of thinking, you're going to go down that path a lot faster.
Yeah.
And this work really, it requires people to stop and think and be so intentional about new ways of thinking, new ways of doing, new ways of collaborating, and then getting on, you know, getting your team behind it to like, be like, we're going to do this differently, even though it's going to feel weird at first.
Yeah, that's right. And it is, I mean, really what you're talking about is neuroplasticity at scale, which is hard to do. Make sure everybody's doing it the same direction. So, and they can only take on so much, because then they get back to their day jobs and now they have to think about how I'm going to integrate some of this stuff. So yeah, it's a long process. I mean, I typically do one intervention up front, and then we do like a 90-day sprint afterwards to say, okay, where did these new behaviors collapse and what do we want to do differently? And are there certain points of the customer journey or the employee journey where we know that that's really, you know, the most pressureful. So whether that's internal reviews or whether with a customer, it's when they've got an escalation and they're irate when all of our behaviors start to collapse, and how can we actually support people in those moments that matter?
Mm. Yeah. I feel like I could totally see you building out the tech platform around this part of it.
Yeah.
Like the behavioral nudges in between.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, yes, exactly. And then you think about like what's possible from the neuroplasticity thing and what you could do with VR headsets and all kinds of stuff to actually say, like, here's what the new behavior would look like. And now I've seen it, and how can I model it? There's really cool stuff that can be done with
it. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I feel like we're doing that focused on team cohesion and alignment
absolutely.
And performance.
Yeah.
But it's for you, it's really about, you know, we're just looking on like cohesion really as a driver.
Right.
And so how do you nudge behavior to have people have better relationships. Mm-hmm. But for you, it's really a behavior, like a different, it's like, pick this behavior. We're going to do something different in the way.
Yeah. Right.
I know we're coming close to the end of time, but what I didn't ask you, is anything in your mind that you want to share that I haven't like asked you about?
Gosh, I mean, I could talk to you all day about this stuff.
I know.
I know. The biggest thing is when I think about where I see us heading is, I think about this a lot, actually, and write about it a decent amount, but it's very ironic to me that we are thinking about this moment in time where we're so afraid of the robots taking over. And we don't even realize that we've become the robots. We are just on autopilot. Yeah. We are pushing the button. We are doing the thing. We're showing up to work. We're filling, 80 hours worth of work. But when we actually look at what we did it align to either the growth goals that we had or what we wanted for our personal lives? So I just think we're at this moment where AI has the power to really unlock human potential at scale if we can do it intentionally. So I'm pretty excited about what that could be and hoping to get that message out to as many leaders as possible so they have a chance to actually choose intentionally how they're going to expand instead of just contract.
I love it. Yeah. And I see that too, right? It's about like assessing, it's like raising that awareness around like what we're actually doing and then being thoughtful about how we can be better optimized. And AI is really good at that, kind of helping us see ourselves and then nudging behavior to help us get to a place where we actually want to be.
Yes, agreed. You know? And I think the leaders and the companies that are going to come out ahead in this next couple of years, even months, are the ones who are seeing it just that way, that they can get more clarity, they can get more alignment, they can actually pull through their growth goals in a different way if they don't just add it on top, but actually really think about re-architecting their growth systems.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're incredible, Jenny. I love all the conversations we have, and I don't know when our next one is, but hopefully it's in the next week or two.
I would love it. What time next week?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending some time this morning with us, and we will talk soon.
Thanks for having me, for sure.
Of course.